You know, throughout my lifetime, I have found something very interesting in regard to people. And it is this. People are everywhere, and you can't get away from them. Just think about your various activities this past week, heck, even just this past weekend. The barista who couldn't even look up at you while handing over your coffee at your favorite donut place. The driver who cut you off on 278 as you were approaching the light. That annoying relative who sends a weekly email calling you out for something you did or didn't do. That store clerk who is totally engrossed in a personal text message on his phone while you wait patiently, or not, for him to unlock the ink cartridge cap. People. They are everywhere. And each one of us faces a daily dilemma regarding how we will live with them or how we might live without them. So here's an honest question I'd like you to answer by a show of hands. How many of you have someone in your life who you wish would change? Here's a second question, which inevitably must follow the first. How many of you have someone in your life who wishes you would change? Yeah, that tension is real and reciprocal. Oftentimes, the biggest reason for our frustration with other people is because we want them to change on our terms. We want them to do what we want them to do. We want them to act like we want them to act. We want them to think like the same way we think. And oftentimes, they just won't. Can you imagine? Simultaneously, there's always someone else out there who looks at us and asks, why won't you change? Hence our frustration with people in general. And their frustration with us. So what are we to do? Well, let's return to the New Testament book of Romans as we finish up the 12th chapter and hear what the Apostle Paul instructs us this week in regard to who we are called to be as followers of Jesus Christ. I'll be reading out of the Message paraphrase of the Bible. This particular chapter, the Message does such a great job in making it real and making it understandable, what Paul has to say. So I'll be reading verses 9 through 21 of chapter 12. Love from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. Run for dear life from evil. Hold on for dear life to good. Be good friends who love deeply. Practice playing second fiddle. Don't burn out. Keep yourselves fueled and aflame. Be alert servants of the Master, cheerfully expectant. Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder. Help needy Christians. Be inventive in hospitality. Bless your enemies. No cursing under your breath. Laugh with your happy friends when they're happy. Share tears when they're down. Get along with each other. Don't be stuck up. Make friends with nobodies. Don't be the great somebody. Don't hit back. Discover beauty in everyone. If you've got it in you, get along with everybody. Don't insist on getting even. That's not for you to do. I'll do the judging, says God. I'll take care of it. Our scriptures tell us that if you see your enemy hungry, go buy that person lunch. Or if he's thirsty, get him a drink. Your generosity will surprise him with goodness. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good. Wow. That's quite a list of guidelines to which Paul is challenging us to adhere. And did you notice the one common thread which trying to convince people to think exactly how we think. We are called to adjust ourselves to others. Wow. There's a novel thought. In an online devotional recently, I read about a married couple who got so caught up in arguing over how to load the dishwasher that they nearly missed their pickleball court time. You see, the husband insisted on stacking the plates vertically between the racks, while the wife insisted the plates be stacked horizontally. She's right. Hours later, after they had removed themselves from the tension for a while, they realized that the battle was never really about the dishes. Rather, it was all about control. Control. That nasty mindset that is at the root of so much tension and conflict and division. So often, again, it's expressed like this. I want you to change, to be more like I want you to be. I want you to act more in line with how I think you should act. I want you to think more closely to the way in which I think. And if you don't, well, I'm out of here. Here's an example to which any of you who are on social media can relate. Suppose you have a close friend who has posted something with which you don't agree. So you send them a message, perhaps even a truth bomb, demanding that they rethink their post. Not surprisingly, they do not respond favorably to your suggestion. And so you block them, or mute them, or unfriend them, all the while saying to yourself, well, if they were really a Christian, they'd see it my way. But by now, you've blocked them, or muted them, or unfriended them, so what might they be thinking about you? For some reason, I guess perhaps it's just our flawed human nature, we constantly want to control how others think, and how others feel, and how others respond, how others live. The only problem with that is that those same folks are feeling that same way toward us. And Scripture tells us, if you've got it in you, get along with everybody. That's a huge challenge. Everybody? After all, every single one of us here today has had enough life experience to know that we can't force other people to get along with us. But still, we're called to respond and react in accordance with Christ's example, not the world's practices. And thus, as much as we've got it in us, as much as we've got God in us, we can try our best to get along with others. A friend of mine from the church I served in Augusta, Georgia, was telling me recently about some tension her daughter had experienced in her office setting. My friend's daughter, Sarah, had a coworker who was consistently undermining her in meetings. So Sarah prayed about the situation, she listened to the Spirit's guidance, and she chose to initiate a private conversation with her coworker, where she expressed respect for him, she acknowledged those things about him which she appreciated, but simultaneously she stated her honest grievances with his actions. Notice, if you will, that Sarah did not choose to publicly humiliate her co-worker. Yet she also stated that she would no longer stand for his constant degradation. And over time, the tension between the two softened. So that story got me to thinking a lot about the ways that I can actively pursue peace in situations where others may not be receptive or open to compromise. As much as I've got it in me, help me to bless my enemies, not curse them. As much as I've got it in me, help me to not insist on getting even. As much as I've got it in me, help me to not let evil get the best of you. Instead, help me to get the best of evil by doing good. Now, of course, things don't always work out as smoothly as Sarah's office situation. In fact, I specifically recall an account in the New Testament book of Acts, chapter 15, where Paul and Barnabas could not agree on whom to bring on a missionary journey. So Paul and Barnabas parted ways. We don't know for sure if their assignment would have been more successful had they stayed together, but the point is this. Peace accomplishes so much more than endless friction. As most of us know, and as most of us have experienced, people are imperfect. But so are our expectations of those people. Every relationship in which we are involved will disappoint us in one way or another because every single person, including each one of us, has flaws. Do we not think that we disappoint others as much as they disappoint us? And since we expect everyone else to always understand us and or excuse us and or forgive us, then shouldn't we apply that same grace to others when they are in need of understanding or mercy or forgiveness? A wonderful phrase which often gets overlooked in the diverse set of instructions the Apostle Paul gives to the Christians in Rome and to us reads like this. Discover beauty in everyone. Verse 17. What I translate that instruction to mean is we shouldn't go out of our way to highlight the things that others are doing wrong. Rather, we should consistently tell others what we appreciate about who they are and what they do. I'm pretty sure that all of us would agree that most people desire simply to be seen and appreciated. They don't want others telling them how they need to be fixed. Most people just want some gratitude over and above correction. A pretty good story from eons ago tells about the owner of a large department store who offered a prize of $5,000 to anyone who could give the best answer to the following question. How can my business be the most speedily and radically improved? Several students from the economics departments of various area colleges submitted very creative and very strategic answers. But Roy McCardle received the prize money by submitting a short and extremely simple answer written on a postcard. It said, "Tell your employees to always say thank you." How radically profound is that? As much as I've got it in me, Lord, help me to not be stuck up. As much as I've got it in me, Lord, help me to avoid the need to be the great somebody. As much as I've got it in me, Lord, help me to discover the beauty in everyone. You know what I hope for us as individuals and collectively, as a church, is that we might be more intentional about putting these diverse and challenging guidelines into practice in every relationship we encounter, in every arena in which we find ourselves, in every situation we are facing. So here are a few just final practical steps I want us to consider as we reflect upon all that the Apostle Paul and ultimately Jesus the Christ calls us to do and to be as we attempt to live in harmony with one another. First off, ask yourself, who in my life do I desperately want to change? Write down their name or names and identify those areas in which you desire them to change. And then remember this, we can influence others, but we cannot control others. So let God handle their heart. And And secondly, ask yourself, what things about me do I need to change? Ask yourself, where can I make changes without compromising my convictions? Something important that each one of us knows, but I fear we forget frequently amidst the chaos of the world, is this. The heart of the Christian walk is not just about us and God. It's also about how we live with others, how we adjust and compromise for and with others. It's about forgiving others and how. It's about investing in others and sometimes letting go. Ultimately, it's about peace with others and love for others. And so, if you've got it in you, if you've got God in you, simply love from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. Be good friends who love deeply. And discover beauty in everyone. Amen. I invite us to stand again and sing our next hymn of response, number 408, The Gift of Love. And let's just sing verses 1 and verse 3. Verse 1 and verse 3. Response to God's initial sayings bring us comfort and inspiration. But what challenges us most is the command of Jesus, which declares, as I have loved you, so you should love one another. That other, not just being those who think as we do, or pray as we do, or look like we do. So help us, loving Lord, to live up to the challenge of loving as you would have us love, through our giving, through our living, and through our service.